Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, September 1st, 2011. I'm Lee Robertus. In the news tonight, police prevent Megalod protesters from entering crosswalks in Moscow. Alberta-bound Megalod clips motorhome in Montana. Hearing examiner rules against Pullman firefighters. The city of Moscow says 25% to 30% of the sewer lines need to be replaced, and redistricting commission still deadlocked. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live on KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robertus, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A hearing examiner with the Washington Public Employment Relations Commission has rejected a claim of discrimination against seven union firefighters in Pullman. The International Association of Firefighters Local 1982 claimed the city had wrongly taken disciplinary action against chapter president Captain Eric Reber, after a claim by a female firefighter who said Reber's behavior towards her created a hostile work environment. Hearing examiner Jamie Siegel also ruled the city did not discriminate against six other union members who were disciplined as well. Siegel wrote in the 85-page report, the city, quote, did not discriminate against any of the named employees or interfere with their employees' rights. Some of the disciplined firefighters have filed a $2.5 million lawsuit against the city of Pullman. City Supervisor John Sherman told the Lewiston Tribune the city wants to establish the type of workplace where people treat each other with dignity and respect. Sherman said, "We have great people in the department, but we've acknowledged that we have some issues there. I think there's been significant improvement, but I'm not naive enough to think everything has been resolved." Three Native Americans who believe the $3.4 billion settlement in the Eloise Cobell land royalties lawsuit was too low have filed notice of appeals. Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate Nation member Kimberly Craven of Boulder, Colorado, says she plans to appeal. The nonprofit Harvest Institute Freedmen Federation has also filed a notice of appeal on behalf of Leatrice Tanner Brown and William Warrior. The appeals could delay implementation of the settlement, which would allow the purchase and consolidation of Native American land holdings for the benefit of Native Americans and allow the disbursement of $1.5 billion to more than 50,000 Native Americans. Dennis Gingold, the attorney for lead plaintiff Eloise Cobell of the Blackfeet Nation, said this is the largest settlement involving the government in American history, and it resolves egregious breaches of trust that have continued for more than a century. Gingold and other plaintiff attorneys are asking U.S. District Judge Thomas Hogan in Washington, D.C. to require a $8.3 million appeal bond from the settlement critics. Gingold said the bond would cover or increased settlement administration costs, the cost of assembling documents, legal costs, and lost interest. Craven has argued the settlement was politically motivated and done without input from tribes. She has written op-ed pieces saying the settlement will enrich Cobell and other plaintiffs and their attorneys, but it is uncertain whether other plaintiffs would benefit. The University of Idaho announced today it will hold a memorial service for slain UI student Katie Benoy next Wednesday at the Administration Building Auditorium. Benoy was killed at her Lily Street apartment August 22nd, and all indications are she was killed by her former psychology professor, Ernesto Bustamante, who then killed himself as police closed in on his University Inn Best Western hotel room. In another aspect of the case, the Lewiston Tribune interviewed a nationally prominent psychiatrist about the four prescription drugs police say they found in Bustamante's hotel room, which are used to treat anxiety, depression, epilepsy, sleep disorders, and bipolar disorder. Each drug can be used to treat at least three of the disorders, so it is unclear which of the disorders Bustamante suffered from. Dr. Peter Breged of Ithaca, New York, told the paper, "That cocktail of drugs is a prescription for violence and suicide. I see this kind of thing all the time with just one of the drugs, but in combination, they get worse." Moscow Public Works Director Les McDonald has told the Daily News the first comprehensive study of Moscow's sewer lines in 15 years has shown 25% to 30% of the city's lines need to be replaced, and another 17% need corrective action. McDonald said the mall and south sewage lift stations need upgrades to increase capacity. Moscow has four lift stations around town. Consulting firm Keller Associates examined video footage of up to 15,000 feet of sewer pipes filmed over the last 18 years. The firm outlined projected work until the year 2060. McDonald says one priority is to connect a new south trunk pipeline and another line from the wastewater treatment plant with a dry line recently built by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. He said that work will likely be done next summer using money from sewer fees and connection fees. The city is coordinating that work with the University of Idaho, which uses treated effluent to water most of its lawns. The city is taking public comments on the Keller Associates report until tomorrow. It can be found at the City of Moscow website. Police were out in force last night as the second of 66 planned ExxonMobil tar sands shipments made its way north through Moscow. At least 40 state troopers plus Latah County Sheriff's deputies and Moscow police fanned out around downtown in the hour and a half before the megaload arrived in Moscow at about 11:45 p.m. By that time, several police officers stood in front of protesters at each crosswalk at the intersection of 2nd and Washington Streets, where most of the more than 100 protesters were gathered. During the hour before the megaload arrived, police were telling protesters they would be allowed two passes in the crosswalk and would be warned each time, and that they would not be arrested until they went into the crosswalk a third time. By 15 minutes before the megaload arrived, that had changed.
Did you hear that they took back their agreement about how many times protesters can be in the crosswalks? Well, I don't know what the reason is, but I did hear from one of the officers that they have rescinded their agreement, and now anybody who goes out in the crosswalk is liable to be arrested the first time.
Oh, I see.
Basically, no warning.
Right, right.
They'll warn them as they're being arrested.
Okay, it's three police cars have moved. Now there's the oversized load thing. And the police, nobody's crossed the police line. And it has just gone through the biggest large group of protesters. The sound of protesters chanting from the sidewalk as last night's 233,000-pound tar sands shipment passed the corner of 2nd and Washington Streets in Moscow. Catherine Bonzo provided live coverage from Washington Street for KRFP, and here was her overview after the megaload went through.
Everybody was definitely staying to the corner and making sure that they weren't mistaken for a pedestrian tonight.
Yeah. So were you there when the police rescinded their permission to use the crosswalk?
And they were quite clear. They stepped into the sidewalks and said the crosswalks are closed. They said that and moved in. They were making it clear what they were going to be doing.
It sounds like that was the plan all along, even though people were told that they would be able to cross twice. At first, they were told that.
Yeah, and then I think they were told that they could get a warning, And then they, I think they were just keeping all of the protesters out because they realized that these people were poised to definitely stop that mega load. So they made sure that they wouldn't. So they took the action they needed to stop it, and they were successful.
Okay, well, that's the story tonight from the corner of 3rd in Washington and 2nd in Washington. And 2nd in Washington seemed to have the most protesters, about 100 tonight.
Yeah, the police now are dispersing themselves. They're off in that. They're walking toward me now as they all go back to regular duty. And they had cuffs with them just in case. None were used.
That was Catherine Bonzo giving an overview of the situation after dozens of police made sure that ExxonMobil's two-lane-wide megaload would not be stopped even for a short time by civil disobedience as it made its way north to the Alberta tar sands. The megaload was scheduled to stop for the day at the Benoit County line and continue moving north on US 95 at 10 p.m. tonight. And we have this from the feed from the roof of the building where KRFP rents its studio space. As citizen journalists, we're preparing for a live broadcast from the roof with a good view of Washington Street. And that was to describe the protests as the megaloads passed.
What's happening here tonight?
We're broadcasting live.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you guys have radio from Moscow?
Yes.
Okay.
So you guys are doing a show from up here?
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys are allowed to be up here?
Yes.
Do you guys have ID on you?
Down in the
Yes. Yeah, I just want, can I check it? Are you going to be up here tonight then?
I am not.
You're going to be down there?
I'm going to be on the sidewalk.
Okay.
This time.
Well, that's cool. No, that's fine. Just recognize your photo.
Moscow 31, want to check. Last of Willard. William Ida Lincoln, Lincoln Adam Robert David, first of David Common, middle A Adam, TOB 100558, Mail Idaho. Are you an employee with the radio station?
Yeah.
Are you?
Volunteer.
Volunteer.
And the engineer.
But they could verify that you're supposed to be up here.
Oh, okay. Okay, so who gives permission to be up on the roof of the building then?
Probably the owner of the building.
Probably the owner, but I have de facto permission all the time anyway because I have to maintain the antennas and everything.
We always like to verify that people have the right.
She's giving me all the keys to all the buildings.
Who is the manager?
Karen Stubbs.
Karen Stubbs.
Yeah.
With Laytaw?
Yeah.
Laytaw is the realty, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, but it's her own private.
Chair of the board. Yeah. The radio station.
Chair of the board.
All right. Okay. Thanks. You guys have a good evening.
Mm-hmm. You guys have your permission to be up here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Just checking.
Police went away and shortly returned to the roof, ordering the broadcasters to leave. They said they had contacted the owner of the building and permission was not given to be on the roof. From a conversation with the landlord's husband, it appears he was woken up by a call from Moscow police and told that people from KRFP were recreating and hanging out on the roof. The landlord, Karen Stubbs, was not in town, and the husband, Dale Stubbs, upon hearing people were hanging out on the roof, told police that the broadcasters could not be there, and the broadcast was shut down. This is the KRFP Evening Report. You're tuned to KRFP in Moscow. A non-ExxonMobil megaload bound for Alberta clipped a motorhome towing a Suburban on Highway 200 east of Ovando, Montana last week, but after a state police investigation, neither the driver of the load nor the hauler, Ryash Transport of Leduc, Alberta, were cited. According to the permit issued by the Montana Department of Transportation, the 115,000-pound, 14-foot-wide load had a metal jut that made the load 23 feet 8 inches wide. The driver of the motorhome, Eldon Dreyer, measured the width of the highway where he was clipped and found it to be 32 feet wide, guardrail to guardrail, leaving 8 feet 4 inches of clearance for his 9-foot-wide motorhome. Dreyer was first passed in the other direction by two pilot trucks with flashing amber lights, waving a red flag out the window. He said these guys were driving 50 or 60 miles an hour, going like a bat out of hell. J.C. Ellender, the driver of the Suburban the motorhome was towing, contacted Ryash Transport, whose owner Michael Hutchings said Dreyer was entirely in the wrong and that he should have stopped his motorhome and pulled over when he saw the first escort vehicle. According to the Montana Department of Transportation travel permit, the load entered Montana from Idaho on Interstate 90 at Lookout Pass, but left the interstate to avoid construction. The permit allows the loads to travel at 55 miles per hour, does not require nighttime travel, and does not require oncoming traffic to stop. Dreyer told the Missoulian newspaper, quote, "I sure think it would be a good idea to let people know this is going on. If you see somebody leaning out a window and waving a flag, you better get off the road and stop," unquote. The megaload sheared off the driver's side mirror of the motorhome, broke the driver's window, and shattered the windshield of the towed Suburban. The state of Washington will begin accepting competitive bids next week for companies that want to lease the state liquor warehouse and wholesale distribution system. The state will require companies to prove they can make money by being more efficient. Companies also may not ask the Liquor Control Board or the legislature to make policy changes to enhance their efforts. However, a liquor privatization initiative effort spearheaded by Costco would require the state to close its liquor stores and sell its assets and allow private stores to sell liquor and set prices. If Initiative 1183 passes in November, any action to lease the state liquor system will become moot. Scientists from Oregon, Washington, and Wyoming published research this week indicating that a side effect of wolf recovery could be restoration of populations of threatened Canada lynx. The scientists from Oregon State University, the University of Washington, and the University of Wyoming note that although habitat damage from logging is an important cause of the demise of lynx, even in unlogged areas, the decline in the wolf population sparks an explosion in the coyote population. Coyotes prey on lynx, as well as the favorite food of lynx, the snowshoe hare. In Yellowstone National Park, where wolves were wiped out in the early 1900s, coyote populations rose and snowshoe hares declined. Reintroduction of wolves has brought an increase in the snowshoe hare population. The research was published in the peer-reviewed Wildlife Society Bulletin. The same judge who ruled in July against a group attempting to block the roundup of wild mustangs in Nevada scolded the Bureau of Land Management Tuesday after reviewing videotapes showing mistreatment of horses by a helicopter pilot. Although the judge declined to halt the northeastern Nevada roundup, Texas-based Wild Horse Freedom Federation President Laura Lee told the Associated Press the judge's action was significant because he acknowledged, quote, "what we see every day." In July, U.S. District Judge Howard McKibben denied a request by the Denver-based Cloud Foundation for an order to block the roundup before it began. The recent complaint by the Wild Horse Freedom Federation alleges a helicopter piloted by BLM contractor Sun J Livestock clipped a horse with the helicopter skid. BLM attorneys contend the videotape produced in court was inconclusive. The same contractor was cleared of allegations of wrongdoing in connection with a videotape of a wild horse that fell during another roundup. Neither the BLM nor Sun J Livestock would comment to the Associated Press. An observer for the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, who observed the roundup for a week in August, said unweaned foals were chased across the desert for miles. ASPCA Senior Vice President Matt Bershadker said BLM contractors lack skills and experience necessary to minimize trauma and stress on horses being rounded up. He said that violates the Wild Free Roaming Horse and Burro Act of 1971. An Idaho Falls teacher and assistant softball coach resigned shortly after Bonneville County Sheriff's began an investigation into his alleged sending of pornographic texts and photos to a 16-year-old girl. 24-year-old Gerald Williams was charged yesterday with sexual battery to solicit participation of a minor. The Pullman City Council Tuesday night voted to approve a one-year moratorium on group medical marijuana gardens, which were legalized by a law signed by Governor Chris Gregoire this year that went into effect July 22nd. Under state law, the city must develop a plan to study possible zoning and licensing rules for marijuana gardens. City Attorney Laura McAloon said a public hearing on the issue must be scheduled within 60 days. McAloon encouraged the council to adopt the moratorium so city staff could evaluate whether zoning and licensing rules are needed for the gardens and to study the effect of federal law on state medical marijuana legislation. Washington cities and counties are allowed to pass one-year moratoriums on legalized medical marijuana gardens if a public hearing is held and there is a finding of fact. They can repeat the process in subsequent six-month increments. Idaho redistricting commissioners spent most of Tuesday's meeting trying to determine what would happen if they fail to decide on a new map for Idaho's 35 legislative districts by next week's deadline. While they were at it, they also grilled a deputy attorney general on whether their deadline for coming up with a plan is really Sunday or whether it is actually next Tuesday after the Labor Day holiday. At the end of the meeting, commissioners debated how to split northern Idaho into seven legislative districts. A Republican plan splits Latah County and the city of Moscow, so incumbent Democratic House member Shirley Ringo and moderate Republican House member Tom Trail, who live in rural Moscow north of town, would be put in a district with all of Shoshone and Benoit counties, plus parts of Kootenai County. Moscow south of Morton Street and south of Public Avenue would be in a district with most of Lewiston and a strip of Latah County along the state line. That would put freshman Democratic Senator Dan Schmidt in the same district as longtime Republican State Senator Joe Stegner of Lewiston. Critics say that plan creates too many safe districts for Republicans and puts too many moderate Republicans who voted against Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna's education overhaul this year in districts with other incumbents. Representatives Ringo and Trail have indicated they believe they've been targeted by the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party. Democrats have proposed following a constitutional directive to split as few counties and communities of interest as possible by putting the entirety of Latah County in the same district as all of Benoit County. But commissioners say the only way to do that is to create a very large district that includes southern Bonner County in the north and all of Shoshone, Clearwater, and Idaho counties. It would take 300 miles of driving to go from one end of the district to another, and no state or U.S. highway connects the northern and southern parts of the district directly. Republican Commissioner Evan Frazier told the Lewiston Tribune, "This is one of the toughest areas. Is there any give on your side to allow more counties to split up north?" Republican Commissioner Lorna Finman, who lives in Rathdrum, said, "For this commission to leave a legacy that's worse than what was done 10 years ago, for me, that's a non-starter." Democratic Commissioner Julie Kane of Lapway said at the end of the meeting she had some maps that could address concerns about the mega district. The maps were not addressed before the commission adjourned until tomorrow. Second District Judge John R. Stegner said he will resentence convicted double murderer Dale Shackelford on Wednesday, September 28th. Stegner denied a motion from Shackelford's attorney, D. Ray Barker of Moscow, who argued that Stegner's exposure to inadmissible evidence and hearsay could make him biased. Shackelford was convicted of shooting and killing his ex-wife, Donna Fontaine, and her boyfriend, Fred Palaniak, in 1999. Judge Stegner sentenced Shackelford to death but withdrew the sentence after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the death penalty must be decided by juries nationwide, not individual judges. Latah County Prosecutor Bill Thompson has since decided not to seek the death penalty in the Shackelford case resentencing. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. Clear to mostly clear conditions all the way through the middle of next week. Low tonight, 45. Highs, 72 Friday, 77 on Saturday, 84 on Sunday, and 87 Labor Day, and again on Tuesday. Lows will be 40, around 40 tomorrow night, 45 Saturday night, and around 51 on Sunday night. There will be breezes of 5 to 15 miles an hour tomorrow and tomorrow night with gusts up to 20. Fair skies right now, 69 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Remember, you can help KRFP keep news reports like this on the air, plus the Morning Mix reports, recordings of local events, and public affairs shows by being a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $25 for students. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Nancy Casey assisted with tonight's newscast. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Talk Nation Radio is next, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. This is KRFP Moscow.